Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 98, recorded on August 24th, 2010. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all the iPhone and iPad and iPhone OS, Windows Phone 7 for, is that it? News.
Personal cuddly experience. Yeah.
Yeah, the personal cuddly experience. I'm Michael Johnston. And with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer, managing editor at the Mac Observer, and Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, guys.
Hey. You know, I have a thing on the Windows Phone 7 stuff.
Windows?
Because I was watching. Yeah.
Well, how is it? What is it called? It's the Windows Phone 7.
They reduced it to Windows Phone 7, right? Haven't they simplified it now? It used to be something messed up.
It was definitely something ridiculous. And I think that I listen to Mac OS Ken Ray a lot. Uh-huh. And when he says it, I think he might be embellishing it, but it's very possible that there are. Because, I don't know, he says like 7 or 8 words.
It used to be like that. I think they have seen the error of their ways, and I think it's just called Windows Phone 7 now. But it's still, it uses, oh, and I wish I could remember what they're calling the UI. You know, like we have Aqua or whatever.
I don't even want to get into
it. They have a name for the UI, and it's the same kind of UI they used for the Zune.
So it's called Ugly.
It doesn't bother me. The only thing that really bothers me about it, and I want to comment on this because they were doing. So I saw somebody doing some browser tests between Froyo, the current Windows Phone 7 build, and iPhone OS. And on Windows Phone 7, of course, the browser is Internet Explorer Mobile, what they're calling it, I guess. But he's doing the test, and he brings up the browser, and because of how that thing is designed, you know, it chops off all the words.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So when you launch it up at the top, it says you're launching Internet Explorer, and it's like half an E.
That's wonderful. Yeah, see, that's the... Okay, it looks okay, but if you want to use it to do something, then no, it doesn't look okay.
Now, see, it doesn't look okay even if you're not actually going to use it. The whole interface looks like it's been eyeballed in place, which is... Coming from a graphic design background annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah,
There's reasons why you can put guides into your documents so that you can make sure everything lines up correctly. And it sure looks like they didn't bother with that. They just kind of eyeballed everything in place, and it looks like hell.
Yeah. All right. Well, we need to move on and talk about
they hired some David Carson reject.
Anyway.
Sorry, that was a graphic artist reference just for Jeff and me.
Okay, so I'm not allowed in on the phone. That's okay. We're going to talk about the iPhone and all that other fun stuff. The first thing I want to talk about is multitasking, and that's just because I've been using my iPhone 3GS with multitasking now, finally. I upgraded a few weeks ago to the iOS 4, and initially... I thought, okay, great. Apple figured it out with the multitasking. They have a great system down. And then I started using it, and I got concerned because stuff starts slowing down after a while. So it led me to figure out how they're doing it. And for those who don't know, the process for multitasking, or the way they have it set up in iOS 4. So if you have an iPhone 3GS or an iPhone 4, when you open an app, it opens as it does normally, on 3.0 and 4.0, it's the same deal. Opens up, you run it, cool. But when you hit the home button, and if it's multitasking aware, the process is Apple allows the developer to release as much memory as possible. But that's up to the developer and what they can do. So if the developer chooses to not release any memory whatsoever from the current running application as it would be in its normal state, then that's fine. That can actually pass. So then after that, once memory has been released, it goes down into this standby mode, which to the developer looks just like an exit, but the state is saved, and you know, various things from RAM are still in RAM, and so it pops up pretty quickly. But what that means is, it's just as you open applications, you are still using up RAM, even if those applications aren't running. If they're backgrounded, then they're still using up RAM. They're not using up CPU, so that kind of that's better than full multitasking. But eventually, you run to a point where you're almost out of RAM or out of RAM, and you need to open something else up. And then here's the problem: you have to wait for the OS to close out one of the other applications that's using up RAM before that other app can open, because there's no RAM left. So that's the problem for me. That, I mean, are you guys noticing any slowdowns like that? For you know, at some point you open up an application, you go to open an app, and it just takes forever.
Yeah, well, yes, and I'm also noticing that I get out of memory errors. Oh, not out of memory errors, but low memory errors periodically.
Oh, you're actually seeing low memory errors?
Yeah.
You know,
I saw some of those at one point too, and I figured it was due to some of the backgrounding crap, and I don't want to get back into that conversation again because it just pisses me off every time.
Well, Apple says to developers that they shouldn't expose users to low memory errors, which is another, you know, no-no for them showing that. But yeah, so because I'm jailbroken...
wait, back up. So there is a low memory condition going on, but Apple says, oh, please don't tell the users about it because...
No, what they want, the notification for the developer, it's for the developer to do something about, hand it over to the end user to do something about.
Got you. Okay, sorry, I was confused.
Don't tell them about them. Yeah.
Don't generate low memory errors, and if your app is, fix them.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Or manage them.
So because I jailbreak, I decided to turn on the memory monitor up in the status bar so I can actually see how much memory is free in my status bar up by the clock. And I also turned on badges for any application that's running in the background to see when stuff quits and when stuff opens. And it's just very interesting to see. I don't know if... See, you guys have... you both have iPhone 4s, right?
Right.
I'm wondering if it's much better on the iPhone 4. Obviously, it has more RAM. It has double the RAM, and so you can open more stuff. But at some point, I'm guessing that it slows down again. So I'm thinking that the best strategy for Apple is to increase the threshold. So if you have, I don't know, 20 megs free, you should then, at that point, before someone goes to open something else, they should start clearing up RAM before that happens, you know?
You know, I have a better idea. Fix the way multitasking works.
And what is your suggestion for that?
Well, I don't have a complete solution yet, but the notion that every app I launch continues to run until I either restart my device or manually go and shut it down is completely borked.
Yeah.
Because I need to use calculator maybe twice a month in some restaurant, splitting up a bill, whatever. So I don't need calculator running all the time. So that there needs to be a better way to differentiate between applications you want to leave running and the ones that you want to quit launch and then quit when you're done using them.
Yeah, and like I said, that's up to the developer right now. And I think that a better solution would be to, provide a way for the user to explicitly turn on the multitasking for applications, for specific apps, you know?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
Right. Yeah, so I was just kind of curious if you guys were having the same sort of issue with that backgrounding thing. Because it just irritates me because it means I have to reboot my phone every once in a while.
Oh, yeah. I found that it's much easier and faster for me to reboot my phone than it is to go through and start shutting off applications that I don't want to have running.
You know, the other interesting thing about that is the reason I turned on no, uh, little icons, little badges on my apps instead of relying on that list is because that list has nothing to do with apps that are running. It just shows you a list of recently used apps. So like even though apps, you know, App Store and Instapaper are definitely not running right now, they're in the list for me. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay. Well, that maybe changes my attitude about the whole thing then.
Oh, yeah?
A little bit. So what you're saying is even if it's in that list, it could be totally shut down and not really sitting there in the background.
Yep. I think the first step to fixing this problem of multitasking is only having apps that are running down there. Right?
Well, I bought into your guys' thing that this it has a little bit to do with the fast switching. Right?
Yeah.
So what that ends up being, you're saying, is more like your recent apps folder on the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These are apps that you recently have accessed.
Right. But when it comes to actually figuring out which apps are running, there's no way to figure it out unless you're jailbroken.
Right. Right, there's no way to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I bought into that concept that, you know, those are in there so that when I'm doing the fast switching thing, they're right there and easy to access. Because the rationale is you're probably going to be switching between the most recently used apps. It does kind of fall down though when I use apps that I don't care to switch through. And again, I bought into the thing that, well, you can still do it the old way too, right? But it only becomes a problem for me when, you know, I am doing something, I launch calculator, some other thing, and then I want to fast switch between two apps and I have to do the swipe back and forth thing. And I just wish I could control, you know, which apps show up in the recently used app list, I guess now, if that's what we're going to call it.
Yeah.
I wish I could define some to say, you know what, these are just little utility apps. They're things that I don't even consider to be, you know, important. I'll get those from the home screen. I don't push off my, you know, when I want to switch between Mail and Safari, which I do a lot, you know.
Yeah, like maybe you want to pin some applications to a specific spot.
There you go. That'd be even better if you could prioritize. I don't know how you'd even enable that, but yeah, it'd be great if I could prioritize and say, look, you know, if these apps have been recently used, make sure they stay off the far left of the list.
Right, yeah. Yeah, or I mean, it seems like we're getting into a, you know, on the Android phones, you can provide a blacklist or a whitelist for application backgrounding stuff, and I've resisted that. I can actually do that right now with the backgrounder application, so it's aware of the new fast app switching, and I actually have backgrounding disabled for, I think it's just settings and iBooks right now. And settings because I don't care what my last choice was. I want to go into settings and do something else. So I don't need it to be back in some, you know, three levels deep into something else.
Mm-hmm.
And then iBooks just takes up so much RAM.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. Takes up lots.
As it compared to GoodReader?
Not
for,
sure.
Like PDFs.
Yeah, I don't know. It's I don't know if it's related to opening the documents or if it's the app, but yeah. Anyway, we should move on to the Apple TV stuff, right? So sure. Kevin Rose weighed in. It doesn't seem like he has a lot of actual information. It seems more speculative, but
really?
Kevin Rose.
That's surprising.
Yeah, I know. I know. He's
never done that in the past.
Right. So
double battery iPhone thing. Wasn't that one of his things?
Yeah, a battery like, for the phone part, and then another battery for the rest of the iPod part.
Sorry,
the phone.
So we'll just bring that up as we're entering this story.
Yeah, that's good. So he recaps with the Apple TV is possibly going to be renamed iTV, smaller, run on the iOS operating system, and it seems like his actual information comes down to it coming out in September, and also that the iPad will be used as a means to interface with the ITV.
Okay, now that part anyone could come up with, because you can already interface with Apple TV with your iPhone or iPod Touch.
And your iPad if you have the app and you don't care about pixel doubling.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, and he talks about games and interacting with the ITV through the iPad. I just don't see that happening. It seems like this is... So he talks about iOS TV applications. Yeah, I think that makes sense as long as we're talking about stuff that's mostly... passive consumption stuff, so like Hulu or HBO to Go or Netflix, that kind of stuff. Possibly news, jumping through some news. I don't know, would you read stuff? I don't think you'd read stuff on a TV. Would you actually want to read your news on a TV?
You know, I've tried that on my Wii, and it's okay for a few minutes. Or if I just want to see something really quickly while I'm already in my Wii. And realistically, who wants to look at news really quickly when you're in front of your Wii? So it's more of a novelty thing.
Right, yeah. He also talks about MobileMe picture sharing, which and video editing, which I don't understand. Where's the video coming from if it's on your TV, right? And then MobileMe picture video sharing, I suppose that would happen if you're uploading some photos to your MobileMe account and then viewing them on the Apple TV, which already happens on the Apple TV. So, yeah. Kevin Rose doesn't seem like he has a lot of extra information. However, Bloomberg reports that Apple is in advanced talks with News Corp to let iTunes users rent TV shows for 99 cents each, which is interesting. 48 hours. It'd be a 48-hour rental period. 99 cents, and I like the idea. I've never been too happy about the idea of purchasing a TV episode for like $3.
You know, there's some TV episodes I'm okay spending a couple dollars on, but having the opportunity to rent shows for really cheap, that would be kind of cool. And in many cases, it would be cheaper than having my cable bill.
Well, yeah, yeah. That cable bill. Do you guys actually watch TV?
Not well. Yeah, I do. There's a few shows, but are you talking live TV or are you talking TiVo TV? What I don't watch is commercials, which is the biggest problem for the industry right now with going digital and on demand and all that stuff. The situation gets worse for them.
Yeah.
Yes. And
yeah.
Yeah. So they have, they have a revenue problem and they know it. And I honestly don't know what the solution is. It's interesting that you mentioned the whole iPad control, because I just had actually bring up Ken Ray again, but I had him on my show yesterday or day before yesterday. And this subject came up of this, you know, $99 thing. And he brought up something interesting. If your iPhone or your iPad was the controller for the device, and I don't know that it can be, because now suddenly you've tied, well, in order to really use the iPhone or that or this new ITV device, you have to have some other iDevice in your life, right?
Right.
So it kind of defeats the purpose. But let's just go with it. Let's just say that there's this integration. Apple could do something very interesting to say that, look, if you want your shows for free, if you don't want to pay a subscription or you want to pay a cheaper subscription service to channels or whatever offerings they might make, and this is me doing this. Ken kind of brought up the concept, but I took it further. And the idea would be, imagine if they could push ads to the iDevice as you're watching whatever show. So rather than doing interstitial ads or rather than doing product placement ads in the show, advertisers could actually pop up stuff on your screen, because when you have that screen in front of you, I don't know if you guys are like me, but a lot of times when I'm watching TV now, I have my iPad sitting there in my lap, or I have my iPhone there as well. And especially if it was the controller for the thing, you're going to have it there in front of you.
Right.
So, and I would find that much less annoying than the pop-up ads they do on screen now, or interstitial ads, or the really lame product placements that I just have to imagine writers of TV shows, when they get the marketing people come in and go, we just got a Pepsi sponsorship. You got to write in wow, isn't this Pepsi One taste delicious somewhere in this episode?
Right? Yeah. It's good for 30 Rock, though. Snapple. I know about Snapple.
Well, some shows do it actually really, really well.
Yeah.
I watch a show called Psych, and we get the DVD. And I've been going
I love
through.
Psych.
We've been watching their latest season, and they've been doing a great job with product placements. Axe. They've been doing great ones for Axe. You know, the body sprays and deodorants.
Right, yeah.
Oh, right, right.
Isn't their tagline, "Where are the ladies?"
Oh, Axe,
no,
yeah.
Michael, that's your tagline.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's on my Twitter.
But no, but so imagine if you know, you just said, look, I'm going to opt in for ads on my iPad so I can get cheaper or free shows. And so as I'm, you know, watching this stuff, little ads and things can be pushed to the screen that's in front of you.
Interesting.
And then you could interact them like iAds, you know, and then they could be iAds and they could pop up and you could do a full interaction and still be experiencing your show. Because I think a lot of people multitask like that now anyway. So it seems like a solution that might better fit the changing times and changing technology than some of the other garbage that they're trying to throw at us.
Yeah, it'd be
and
interesting
Apple
to see
a system
if...
that Apple definitely has an ecosystem and a system that could deliver that kind of solution.
Yeah, I wonder if Apple is planning to use iAds in the iTV at some point.
You have to imagine, because that's what the advertisers need. So if Apple needs to get content, the best way they're going to be able to do that is solve this dilemma for the TV studios that they've had now for ever since the TiVo became popular, and DVRs with the cable companies and things like that. The other dilemma that they have, though, is that Apple has, and the advertisers, because I think to a certain degree the networks want to go direct, and Ken pointed this out as well, and I had forgotten about it, is there's a lot of ad money generated locally by your cable operators that gets lost when networks and Apple and digital people are going direct to consumer over the internet. And those local guys are still the guys that are providing the connection to your house. You know, that's your cable company. That's Cox and those guys. And this solution could also deliver a solution for them, because Apple could also go, look, in addition, you know what, we'll let you sell in local iAds, and we'll use the GPS geolocation data in these devices to deliver the appropriate ads to the appropriate people.
Well, that would be nice.
That would be interesting. And I mean interesting in a good way.
Yeah. So it brings up a really interesting ecosystem, because you don't have to tie the ads into, you know, 30-second interstitials or whatever between episodes. You can kind of push them out and in. You could geolocate them. You could. It becomes a really interesting dynamic, but you have to have this little screen in the form of an iPhone, iPod Touch, or an iPad in front of the person. And I don't know that that's viable, unless they're going to have a touchscreen remote. I know Apple's had patents for that too, so they could have a really dumbed down device that works as a touchscreen remote that's bundled with the iTV thing that can facilitate all this stuff, and it just has kind of that one app running on it along with the TV controls or the device controls.
It's funny you should mention that, because in the last Apple Context Machine, that's exactly what Brian was trying to convince me that Apple may be doing with the rumored 7-inch iPad, that it's actually just the touch interface remote for Apple TV. And using that to push ads out, that could be kind of a compelling thing.
Interesting. Yeah, so because even if you had that device sitting, you know, so you queue up your show, you have it sitting on the table, the coffee table in front of you, it's going to come to life, and an ad gets pushed to it, and you're gonna glance at it, and maybe you pick it up, and maybe you interact with it, especially if it's as compelling as some of the iAds that are there, and you don't have to leave the show that you're watching, and it's not interrupting it. And guess what? You're getting the TV content still for free, like you do today. Well, or other than beyond, you know, your cable service, but
yeah, free-ish.
At a lower cost, free-ish. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's interesting to think about. But that is the kind of thing that Apple could pull together and could be working on. Seems viable.
Maybe.
Well, what do you want? I mean, do you want the other alternative? This is my complaint because, you know, the HBO thing came out and it sounds like HBO is going to have an app if I subscribe to HBO, which is what, 10, 20 bucks a month on top of my cable bill. And if I want Hulu, it's another 10 bucks a month. And I already pay $8 a month for Netflix. And then, you know, ABC or somebody's going to come along and say, well, if you want our content, we'll sell it to you for $8 a month on your iPad. And, oh, crap, now I'm paying $80 again for all my TV content.
Yeah,
because I have to pay each vertical, you know, player their bit. So we're back to where we are today, which is, you know, buying individual shows for $2 or whatever it is. That's not the solution either.
Right, yeah.
Sorry, Jeff, you were saying?
Oh, I was saying, I think HBO is totally missing the point of the digital streaming distribution model. Because their idea is we charge people for this content. That makes it exclusive. That makes people think it's worth more. Therefore, they will want to pay for it. Which I don't think is actually going to be a really good business model. Because there's a lot of people that are thinking, okay, well, if I could get something that's like bundled with Apple TV, or if I could get a very inexpensive service, or you throw commercials in with it, then I'll watch more of your content. But expecting people to have a full HBO subscription through their cable provider just so that they can watch content away from their television, I don't think that's going to work well for selling shows.
Yeah. And so I want to ask you guys this, and maybe I have in the past. I don't remember because I've asked a lot of people this question, though. But the dilemma that I'm having in this sort of vertical, you know, I buy Hulu and Hulu has, I forget which networks on it. And, you know, HBO is their own kind of cable network thing. The problem I have with buying a whole network worth of content is that's not what I want. I want the iTunes model today, right, where I buy individual shows. And I usually want all the episodes of a show. If I like a show, I want to watch all the episodes. I just don't want onesie and twosie episodes. But I don't care. I don't freaking care what network the show is on. That's really irrelevant to me.
Yeah, I'm in the same position. There are specific shows that I like. I don't even know what networks they're on.
Right.
So I don't care.
So you don't want to buy NBC for the two shows that you watch on NBC. You'd prefer to just buy the two NBC shows.
Right. 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 Yeah. There was one of the cable networks has a show that I absolutely love, Dexter. I don't even know which one that's on.
It's Showtime.
Okay. See, what I've ended up doing was just waiting for the DVDs to come out and then going and getting the DVDs and watching. So I'm always like a season and a half behind because of that. But right. It's cheaper for me to do that than to pay for a subscription to the premium channel that I'm not going to watch except for that one show.
And I think what's proven this to me too is the success and popularity, at least with the people I know, of DVD seasons. You know, people buy whole seasons of shows. I know a bunch of people that don't have cable. They just wait for the full season to come out on DVD for $30 and they buy it.
Yeah.
Right. That's still gets a little pricey. And so I think really the solution that I would love, and it seems Apple seems poised to be able to deliver it if they can figure out how to make the TV studios play with them, is iTunes as a subscription model, and you pay certain amounts of money for certain numbers of shows.
It'd be interesting, you know with all the stuff that iTunes is handling. Now it's interesting to think that they might change the name from iTunes to something else, like iMedia Experience or something like that. But yeah, so moving right along to iPad stuff. The according to Fortune, iPads are being shipped much quicker. The production is way up, and so. Actually reducing the strain on the line, and they're actually I believe it's GigaOm also reports that Apple's ramping up production of the iPhone 4 as well. So actually, if you look at the iPad shipping estimate on Apple's website, I think it was like 2 to 7 days a week or two ago, and now it's 1 to 3 days. And according to the GigaOhm piece, it seems like we'll get to a very steady supply of iPhone 4s toward the end of September, which is very good, and I'm anticipating my long-awaited white iPhone 4. If that ever
so,
that.
So Michael's learning about disappointment.
Oh, yeah. I will be learning about disappointment.
Yes. Now you're learning about patience.
Yeah.
See, Apple is wonderful to teach our young kids these life lessons.
Yeah. Disappointment and patience. Mostly disappointment.
Yep.
Did you see that Apple finally opened up the ability for magazine publishers to provide those people who already have subscriptions to the magazine in print form to get free editions, to subscribe for free to the magazines through App Store applications. So, for example, People magazines, if you already subscribe to People print form, you get it for free on your iPad.
Oh, that's so awesome. I hope Wired does that. I'll even pay them a little bit more.
Frankly, the print
version's too cheap.
You got to wonder, they charge more for a digital subscription, don't they, than they do for a paper subscription?
I don't think Wired's going to do a good deal digitally. I just don't see it happening, because Condé Nast, even though they have some incredibly brilliant and talented forward-thinking people at Ars Technica that could tell them exactly what they need to do, they won't listen.
Condé Nasty?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you pronounce it.
No, I don't know. I know that I think I can't remember what I pay for a printer subscription, but it's only like $1 an issue. So going back to what you were saying, Michael, yeah, it's totally skewed, because on the iPad it's like $5. I think they lowered the price. I think it's $4 an issue now, but it was $5 an issue.
Yeah.
And see, I didn't think Wired was a very compelling magazine on the iPad.
Even though I didn't like it?
No.
Oh.
And it's because, do you remember back when the whole multimedia CD-ROM thing was really getting big?
Oh, yeah.
And Apple was bundling From Alice to Ocean with every Mac that had a CD drive. I felt like I was just playing with From Alice to Ocean, which in the 80s was stunningly cool, because there was nothing like that. On my iPad, though, it feels like someone just took From Alice to Ocean and put it on my iPad.
And gave you a PDF of it.
Yeah, it doesn't feel to me like Wired has been put together in such a way for the iPad that it actually takes advantage of what this device is capable of. It feels to me like they went, okay, so we have the content, so we'll repurpose it back out of InDesign so that it fits on this screen. Oh, and we'll drop in a couple audio files and a couple QuickTime files, and magazine, go.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Have you found one that, because I've been hesitant to download any others, because I like the Wired one a lot, to be honest. I thought it was okay. I probably had a little better impressions of it than you did, but not for the price. And so I've seen some other ones come out. I played around with SI's, you know, kind of free version. Wasn't that impressed there. So I'm curious if you found one that's really kind of pushing the envelope in your opinion. Or are they all kind of taking the Wired approach?
None of them are really pushing the envelope yet. But
yeah.
But I think we've got some others that are doing a little bit better job. Like, I actually liked how Time Magazine is doing theirs. And it's not anything that goes beyond my expectations and really excites me. But when I played with the Time Magazine app, I was like, okay, yeah, here's a company that's getting that this isn't paper with a movie taped onto a page. So I liked that one. And the Popular Mechanics, I've downloaded that, but I really haven't had a chance to get into it and really play with it yet, so I don't know. And I just downloaded Slate the other day too, so I need to take a look at that. But Yeah, most of the magazines.
I look forward to your reviews.
Oh, well, cool. Yeah, but most of the magazines I'm looking at on the iPad, and I'm thinking, yeah, you're just repurposing content. You're not taking advantage of what this platform, what this new medium can let you do.
You know, that's not the issue that I had so much with Wired. Is, you know, I'm fine with, okay, Wired is a magazine. I want to get it on my iPad. It wasn't such a big deal that I didn't see all these flashy features. It was more of a UI problem where there was sometimes there's a second page, but you couldn't really tell. You just kind of had to pull up on each one, and scrolling through stuff didn't work properly, and it.
Yes, and there's a lot of inconsistencies.
Yeah. And sometimes you can say, oh, I see how they're doing it. They're indicating that there's another page with this kind of design, and then you get to another thing and you realize, not at all, they're just being crazy.
Yeah, it's like they went, okay, so here we have these new cool tools we can play with to try and repurpose the content we've already created. Let's just try everything and see what happens.
Yeah. All right. So, did you guys see the new patent that Apple published about the iMac that transitions into a touch iMac?
Yes.
Yeah. So what the patent describes is something that looks very similar to the current iMac, although it has an extra hinge so that you can tilt it down so that it's parallel or more parallel to the ground, and they say that there would be a way for that to sense when its orientation changes and then produce a different interface. So it would actually provide you with a touch interface. So you could use it as a normal iMac with a high resolution display where you use your mouse pointer and do keyboard and that kind of thing. But if you want to go touch mode, you flip it down and you start tapping on things on the screen.
Which looks cool.
Definitely looks cool. Is it useful?
But, well, my first impression is no.
Yeah, me
and
too.
And that's because the last thing I want is to have the computer that I'm working at all day long with fingerprints all over the screen.
Yeah, that's true. The fingerprint problem is... it's definitely one issue. I just don't think they're... it doesn't seem like it would be too useful. I think Apple would need to come up with some actual applications to make that... To give a reason to having that.
All right, so then that brings up another thing. Are you planning on running two different sets of applications depending on the orientation of your computer? And if you are, then does that mean, like, if I'm writing a document in BB Edit and then I slide my display down, well, now BB Edit goes away and I'm working on something else. So I can't easily jump back and forth. Or are developers now going to be expected to write interfaces for the traditional keyboard and mouse input method, but when you change your orientation of your display, now they have to have a touch interface to go along with that?
Yeah, I think that would be the way they would have to do it. But that indicates to me that this isn't going to be happening next year, or maybe even the year after that. You know, it seems like it would be a very gradual transition. And this might be one of the steps along the way.
Well, and keep in mind that just because Apple files a patent application for something doesn't mean they're planning on using it.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Or that they're going to use it in the exact way that's shown in the application.
Right. What this indicates to me is that Apple is thinking about the hardware portion, but the hardware is the easy part, you know? The interface part is going to be the difficult challenge here to actually make it useful. And it would require, like you said, something to bring the current desktop variety application into a more touchy-feely position.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming if Apple is seriously pursuing a product that works like this, they've been thinking about how this is going to work.
Still there, Jeff?
I think we lost him.
Uh-oh. Jeff, are you there?
No. Nope. Sounded more like his audio interface cut out than actual.
Yeah, connection lost. But yeah, what do you think, Adam?
Huh?
Well, that was weird.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, there he is.
Huh. You're back.
Yeah, I was talking, and then as I'm talking, I thought, why is everyone's little bubble in Skype gray instead of green? And then all of a sudden, the little window's gone. I thought, well, shit, that's that.
Yeah, so you were saying that Apple probably has been thinking about this for a while, and then you cut out.
Yeah, that was pretty much it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, so we might as well move on.
Exactly. Well, talking about patents, apparently there was a bit of a controversy that went on when another patent hit the internet last week.
Sorry, I'm laughing because I know where this is going with Jeff.
Yeah, talking about a patent application that detects unauthorized iOS device usage. So what it would do is it would, using various methods such as a user's voice or a photo of them, so facial recognition or heartbeat recognition were some of the ways that were also described. Other ways were detecting whether or not a device is jailbroken, or if a SIM card was removed, or if the device is unlocked. And of course, people started thinking, oh, okay, well, Apple's trying to implement these really ridiculous methods to ward off jailbreaking.
Which is total bullshit.
See? Told you.
Yep.
You kind of knew I was going down that path, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I read your piece and we've talked a little bit.
That's true. Yeah, you know, when I started reading these headlines, and I think Adam just actually pulled out my soapbox and set it down for me so I could stand on it. When I started reading these headlines from all these publications that were writing sensationalized headlines about how Apple is trying to patent bricking your iPhone remotely because you're jailbreaking, I thought, oh, Christ on a stick. Really, people? Read the damn patent. It doesn't say anything like that at all. And it just gives people a long list of things that they can use as criteria to determine if their iPhone is being used without their permission, which could mean it's been lost or stolen. And then they can use these criteria to potentially trigger specific actions. So your iPhone can be sending out information about where it is before you even realize it's been stolen, which is great because that cuts down the amount of time from when it was stolen to when you can start looking for it. And the shorter that window, the higher the likelihood you'll get your iPhone back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm assuming, because I didn't read the patent, Jeff, but it sounds like you went through it, that one of these triggers might be, hey, someone's trying to jailbreak.
Yeah, someone's trying to jailbreak the phone. Someone tried to unlock the phone.
To get at data or something like that, maybe that you have encrypted or something that's already protected on there. So, you know, if your phone got stolen, that would be likely something that could happen. Somebody might try and jailbreak it.
Sure. And so if your phone detects that it's being jailbroken or has been jailbroken, then it can lock out data and applications.
Well, and the other thing that even if that was possible at this point, Apple might not be able to implement that.
Oh no, Jeff, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Well, what is the deal here?
Oh, it's a Skype tarded day.
Yeah, so we're gonna get back. Just add Adam back in here. See if it fixes it. There you are.
Was it my turn to get dropped?
Yep. Anyway, you were saying?
What was the last thing you heard?
Jeff, what was the last thing you heard?
Oh, crap. You were mid-sentence when you dropped out.
Okay. Well, I'll start over from the beginning.
Okay. That'll be easier for editing.
Oh, we're not going to edit this.
I remember what I was thinking.
Yeah, but you see, when I say things like... it'll be easier for editing, and then people hear all this, so feel like, oh my God, we got to go behind the scenes.
Yeah, you get to see how the sausage is made.
It's not so magic back here, is it?
Yeah.
So the gist of what I was saying, or what I was just finishing up saying, was that, you know, Ken Ray on the show we were doing pointed out that Apple, even if they wanted to at this point, might not be able to enact that feature. So if the feature was in the phone to be able to, hey, if you detect jailbreaking, do some things, you might not even be able to do it because of the FCC ruling. But even if you could, even if Apple could, at the very least, they'd have to implement it in a way where it was something that the user, the end user, I as the iPhone owner, says, I want to enable this on my phone because I know I'm not going to jailbreak it. So if you see jailbreaking activity, that's out of the normal realm of something I would be doing on the device, do something. And the last thing that I brought up on that show, and I want to mention here too, is how I have actually worked with doing patents. I actually have my name on two patents. Odd.
That's very cool.
Yeah. But it was because I worked for Upper Deck, the trading card company, and I had an opportunity to help develop some new technology. And so I got, you know, a credit on helping write the patent. But in going through that process, what I learned is one big part of when you're working with patent attorneys and stuff like that is, and I think this is a little bit symptomatic of what's broken in the U.S. patent system, but because of how the U.S. patent system works, there's a whole area of developing patent where you specifically write things in a way that is broad. I mean, you have to be specific enough to get the patent, but you want to make it broad enough that you're right on the edge. And also you put in stuff to cover every kind of scenario. So if Apple's developing, if the definition of the patent is a system to protect against, you know, theft or the things that you're describing, Jeff, you're going to write in every possible thing that you might do related to that so that someone else can't come along and write a patent that's close to yours, but say, oh, and ours will check against hacking and protect from that. So because now Apple has a thing in there that says we want to protect from jailbreaking, potentially if they get the patent awarded, somebody else couldn't come in and say, oh, our system is different than Apple's because ours does this and theirs doesn't. Right, so they try and cover every scenario.
Does that totally make sense?
So, a lot of stuff gets written into patents that'll never be used because it's called patent blocking. You're blocking your competitors from developing similar technologies, which is just messed up, by the way, from a pure patent perspective, because you're knowingly writing in things that you're probably never going to use, just to keep somebody else from ever being able to use them.
Have you guys read the book Demon? I think I asked
you about that last time. Yeah.
Yeah. I should just make it my pick, but I think it's completely relevant to this discussion. If for those out there who have read Demon, check out Freedom TM. It actually dives deeper into the idea with Demon. There's a game developer, head of a gaming company. So like John Carmack kind of person. Who dies of brain cancer, but it turns out he leaves behind a computer demon. It's like, you know, something that runs in the background on a computer and waits for various events, that kind of demon. Mm-hmm. And it basically takes over a lot of computer systems and actually has more power than you would assume a computer could, because it has control over like cars and motorcycles with giant blades on them that are, you know, computer run with AI and stuff like that. It's really cool. But the second book talks more about what the stuff that you're talking about. The reason why he set up this demon is because the current society has gone this terrible direction, and so he has to take over and create a new society based on self-reliance and et cetera. And the patent thing that you were just saying is definitely something that they would not allow in this demon civilization with, you know, having just, you know, fights with patents and that sort of thing and blocking other people from doing things just because, you know, you patent something and that kind of thing. So,
right.
Side note.
Right. But, you know, to kind of finish up the conversation, I think, and so we can move on, is that, you know, I'm totally with Jeff on, look, everybody's taking this way too far, and Ken reached the same conclusion kind of on his own. And when I told him about your piece, Jeff, he was like, yep, everybody's just like, they're reading way too much into this. This is not anything that Apple would ever do. I mean, if Apple wanted to shut down jailbreaking, they would have done a lot of this stuff a long time ago. I don't think they're that concerned about it, ultimately. You know, they've expressed some issues with it, but now, ever since the FCC ruling, I think they can't really make the argument they were making. And the fact that they've never really taken action, and plus, they can still do it the normal way, which is to release a software update. And if you're jailbroken, then, well, guess what? Your iPhone doesn't work. But they go, look, we just pushed an update. We didn't, you know, we didn't deliberately mean to do it. And we told you, you know, we don't recommend jailbreaking. So you're on your own.
And Apple also made it very clear that they don't support jailbroken devices.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I mean, there's nothing wrong with Apple saying you jailbreak at your own peril. And,
but they're not going to reach in and deliberately, you know, brick your phone, because they would have done that in the past. And now they legally really probably can't.
No. And even before that, I don't think they legally could have bricked your phone simply because it was jailbroken. Right. Although they could potentially sue you under the auspices of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Which they can't do now.
So
it's a moot point. So the fact that everybody's freaking out over this was kind of silly, because Apple's not going to do it, and they probably couldn't, even if they wanted to.
There you go.
Yep.
So thanks for sharing the soapbox with me, Adam.
Yay.
All right. So is it time for our picks? I think it's time for picks. Unless you want to mention anything else.
I can't think of any. I don't have anything else.
All right.
I had one little oddball thing, but maybe I'll bring it up at the end if I can remember what it was.
Okay. Jeff, you want to go with your iDevice pick?
Oh, sure. Hold on. Let me whip out my iPad.
Oh, I remember while he's doing that. Because I talked about this on my show too, just because I thought it was so cool. Did you guys see the Yelp guys video with their iPad that they hooked up to a kegerator? So this is so cool. So they're fans in the video. They go, "Yeah, we're hackers and geeks, and plus we're fans of beer and we love the iPad. So we thought, let's combine the three of them and see what happens." And so do you guys know about I think it's called the Atomo. I'm probably mutilating the name. It's like a hardware system for like rapid prototyping. I think Make Magazine and those guys are all over it. It's got like Unix system, and you can attach all kinds of things to like a motherboard, and it's supposed to be really easy to kind of build computer systems. I used one of those as kind of the central brain controller, and then they got temperature sensors and flow sensors and stuff like that, and they hooked it up to the keg. And then they ran that up to the tap, and then they also added an RFID tagging system. So each person that has access to the keg has an account. It's not locked out or anything like that, but when you walk up to the keg, it can sense, Jeff's here to get a beer. And so you swipe your RFID and it logs you in, and then it records the date and time you were pouring the beer, how much beer you poured, what temperature it was at when you poured it. And then you can also give it like a star rating. And it's all on an iPad that's hooked up to the keg. And so it keeps track of what beer was in there when you poured it. And then they also wrote a bookmarklet so that, you know, from wherever you are, you can query the keg system and see its current state in terms of temperature, what's in there, how much is left, stuff like that.
That's just awesome. It really is.
So.
Oh, man, I love this country.
Technology.
Oh, I forgot. I was supposed to
your pick.
Yeah.
And, I distracted and you. It was supposed to give you time to find your pick, but I guess I
took well, you away the, from the it. Thing was, I couldn't decide which of the apps that I have that I wanted to talk about, I was going to talk about.
Well, I'm going to be talking, before you pick something, I want to make sure that I say that I'm going to be talking about Nevin Morgan's game. So if you were going to pick that, then were you going to pick that?
No, I'm not going to pick that.
Okay.
No, I'm actually going to pick Photoshop Express.
Okay.
Which it's the new version of Photoshop.com Photoshop.com. It's been updated and named to Photoshop Express, and it added an iPad interface, and it's really nice. I mean, if you want a simple image enhancement and basic editing application for your iPad. It works really well. And you can send images off to photo sharing services directly from the application. It makes a copy of your original image so that when you start making edits, you don't have to worry about ruining the original. And it's working really well for me. The only problem I'm having right now, which a lot of people wouldn't notice, a lot of the built-in effects, when you apply them, they seem to also add a vivid color effect as well. And so a lot of times when I've gone in and applied other edits to an image, then I have to go back and manually adjust like the saturation to bring it back down to where it ought to be, even though that's not something that I ever directly chose as something to change in my image. So other than that, I mean, it works really well, and it's free.
Cool. Photoshop Express, it's
a non-crashy version, right?
Yes, yes. And it turns out the problem, when it first shipped, I think I complained about it, that I couldn't get it to run. Well, I complained about it a lot of places. I can't remember if I complained here. I probably did, because I think I was more than happy to complain to anyone that was within earshot. But the problem was, if you held your iPad in landscape mode.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah, you'd launch the application, and then it would choose a different application to launch.
Oh, you did talk
instead.
About it on here, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it's launching itself now. It's not launching. What app was it launching for you?
For me, it was PhotoGene, which I thought was awesome because it was launching another photo editing app on my iPad.
Like, you probably, I see that you have a better app on here. Let me just switch this out for you.
Yeah, that's kind of how it worked for me. And I know for other people it was different applications, but I thought it was just wonderfully funny that every time I'd tap Photoshop Express, it would launch PhotoGene instead, which, by the way, is a really cool application too. I think that was one of my picks a while ago.
I think so. But yeah, Photoshop Express. Adam, what is your pick?
I am going to pick a game called Castle Tiles from MacHwerx, and that's MacHwerx. You guys know it? Have you guys heard of this game?
I have not.
No.
Do you guys know the game set?
Nope.
Okay. Well, so if you know the game set, which is just basically a matching game, like card game, where you put together matches of three things, and you can do it in a couple different ways. It's sort of loosely, I think, based on that, but it's a game, and it can be multiplayer on a single iPad. So it's not like a network multiplayer, but you can do up to four players on your iPad. And so when you launch the app, what you end up with is kind of four little towers, one in each corner, and each player gets a little corner, and then there's a bunch of tiles that are in the middle, little hexagonal, I think it's hexagonal tiles. And they has four level modes. You can match colors, colors plus shapes plus numbers, and colors plus shapes plus numbers plus backgrounds. So it gets more difficult to find patterns and sets. But what you do is, when the game starts, you grab a set of three. So it could be three colors. So let's just do the simplest one. If you're doing colors, right, you match three of the same color. You drag it from the middle to your little tower, and then your tower launches attacks on your opponents. So every time you make a set, it will lob different things, fireballs or little water bombs or I think stones. And you basically try and knock out your opponent's towers by making little sets of things. So it's a really simple game, but it's a lot of fun, and you can play it with multiple people as you're kind of just sitting around a table, something like that. So if you're a fan of set, it's a great little game, and I think it's $1.99.
It is $1.99, and it's called Castle Tiles. Two words. And with that, my pick is The Incident, and you've probably heard about it already, but if you haven't, I'll tell you about it. It's by the wonderful Nevin Morgan, and I'm guessing a bunch of other people. But as far as I know, Nevin... do you guys know what part Nevin had in the game? Was it the graphics or coding?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I believe Nevin works at Panic. And so The Incident is a very cool little game where you are a little pixel man. You start off on a city street, and stuff starts falling out of the sky. And you have to dodge the stuff that falls out of the sky. And to do that, you tilt your phone or your iPad back and forth, and you can also jump by tapping on the screen, and you avoid the falling stuff. And as more stuff falls, it creates a big pile, and you can actually hop up on top of that pile. And so you start on a city street, and then you end up kind of much higher up in the actual skyscrapers, and you're still bouncing on top of stuff, and then you get to mountains, and you get up to the atmosphere, and then you go into space, and you have to avoid the stuff that's falling on you. So I just, I'm playing right now, and I just died. It says, I got the award for death by empty crate at 505 meters.
Now, I love how the application icon graphic is substantially higher resolution than the game itself.
Yeah, that's very classic game technique, right?
Yes, but in this case, it's one of those things where it's clearly intentional not to mislead us, but to add to the charm.
Yeah, so you're talking about the resolution of the actual character's face is much higher on the icon than it is in the game.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so there's just tons and tons of stuff that falls on you. So I just, death by highest van at 505 meters. So a van just fell on my head. And so there are like little birdhouses. I'm guessing that's a reference to, Birdhouse, the app by Adam Lissagor.
Yeah. You know what? I have a question.
Yeah?
So it's a universal app?
It is a universal app.
And so along with that, the question I always wonder is, how are the game mechanics iPhone versus iPad, and are you finding one's better than the other?
I would say it's a little more comfortable to tilt my phone back and forth a lot and do stuff, mm-hmm. but I have no problem with playing it on my iPad either.
But does it on the iPad, is it a better, different experience, or is it pretty much the same?
In this case, it's the exact same thing.
Okay, cool.
And
I often find that there's some things that work really well on the iPad and then others that work better on the iPhone. And even if it's a universal app, sometimes I prefer playing on one platform versus the other.
Right. And I would say that if I prefer playing on anything, it's probably my iPhone. But the thing is, it's universal. So, just buy it. It's $2. Play it on whatever you want. The only unfortunate thing is there's no syncing of the progress. So if you want to play on your iPad for a little while and then go to your iPhone, you can't do that.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah. But otherwise, it's really cool. It's only $2, and it's got sweet graphics and cool music, and it's really fun. It's great for wasting time. I was at the doctor's office today, and I just had to, waste some time. So I was just playing this, looking like a goofball, waving my iPhone all over the place.
I can clearly picture it.
Me just waving it around more than I would ever need to actually play the game. It's kind of, what's really fun
around you, just kind of leaning back away.
Yeah.
And you completely oblivious as you go through the spasms and gyrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, my favorite iPhone move is when I'm like walking around downtown Chicago or something, and I'm trying to get maps to work, and then it says compass interference. And so I wave it around in a figure eight like a retard. That's my favorite.
Yeah. That one's always fun.
I've been with people when their compass stops working.
And then they just start waving their phone around.
Yeah, and I tell them, well, you have to do a figure eight in the air with it. And they go, no, you're lying. No, really, that's what you have to do.
Yeah,
no,
it seems like a trick.
You're just trying to make me look stupid.
Yeah.
Well, maybe, but really, you have to do the figure
eight. Maybe Apple's trying to make us look stupid.
That's very
maybe
possible.
There is no problem, and just occasionally there's a... there's some code in there that just picks random times and says, hey, it's time to wave it around.
It's actually probably using geolocation. And when you get within range of one of the hidden cameras Apple has around the world, it'll tell you, interference, you have to do the figure eight. And they record all this. And then they show them all to music like Yakety Sax at their holiday party.
And maybe laughs. Maybe they try to get some people like, oh, this guy, I bet I can make this guy cry in like to figure eight waves. So like maybe it'll come up once and he does it and then he gets really frustrated and then he does it again and it just still doesn't work and he starts weeping in the middle of, you know, downtown.
Yeah, those Apple guys, they have such a sense of humor.
They're so fun. Okay, yeah. So my pick is The Incident. It's $2. And,
I have not heard about this game. I'm downloading it now.
Yeah, it's cool. The only thing is it does get a little bit repetitive because it's, you know, you're basically moving back and forth and bouncing.
But it's $2.
It's $2. Come on. Okay, so how much is a coffee at Starbucks? Right? $2. You don't get as much enjoyment out of it, and you can't replay your coffee. So, you know?
There's a bad joke in there somewhere. But
it doesn't work
sure
on your iPad either. Coffee doesn't. Coffee wouldn't work on your iPad.
I'd get it all soggy.
Yeah. So, yep, that's my pick. The Incident, it's $2. And with that, you can check out the show notes as well as a list of the picks. So if you're driving, you know, keep your hands on the wheel. Don't check out your iPhone right now. Don't go to the App Store. You can go to the website. Check them out later when you get home. We have communicators.com is the website. And or you could just type in whcpodcast.com if you don't like to type. And you can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com, and we'll get those emails, and you can send it to me or Adam or Jeff or any other guest that we have on here, and I'll forward it along, or you can send in your comments, questions. You can do audio stuff if you want.
What's that phone number?
Oh, yeah, we have a phone number, too. You want to call in? You can call in 202-642-6667. That's the phone number. Or you can just send an audio comment via email to the feedback that we have communicators address. And you can find Adam at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and twitter.com/mattcast. And the premium show is member.mattcast.com.
And if you haven't signed up yet, go do it now.
Yeah, go do it now. member.mattcast.com. And Jeff Gamet is the managing editor at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, and twitter.com/jgamet is his Twitter. If you want to find is it a chicken on a thong?
I think it's the cat on the thong. Well, maybe the chicken.
I think there's a chicken. It's like a chicken with a monocle on a thong. Go to cafepress.com.
No, just wearing regular glasses.
Okay, regular glasses. You know, you can't get everything you want. cafepress.com/jgamet. He has glasses. He's on a thong. And there's also, you can get a shirt. You can get a tote bag. You can get a coffee mug. All of Jeff's wonderful drawings are on those items. Also at zazzle.com/jgamet.
Hey, and I just sent you a new drawing.
Cool.
Mike? Yep. Sorry, go ahead.
No, what were you going to say, Adam?
I was just going to give Jeff a little marketing tip, because I think, Michael, just you had a great idea for some revenue generation. Is, Jeff, you should do a special chicken with a monocle limited edition that's only available for, say, a week.
Oh, I could totally do that.
And then you give me all the cash for it?
Yeah.
Because it was my idea?
Yeah, and it costs a couple bucks. It costs a couple bucks more, but hey, you'll have an exclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's an awesome idea.
What's the status on the idea of making a drawing of us podcasting on a coffee mug?
The status is I haven't done it yet.
Okay.
I
don't
think
you can podcast on a coffee mug.
It'd have to be a big coffee mug. Yeah, I was waiting to hear if our listeners were really interested in having that, and I haven't gotten any feedback yet.
Oh, okay. Well, here's the thing, guys. I've gotten a little bit of feedback over Twitter, I think, but if you want a coffee mug, and we have Communicators coffee mug drawn by Jeff, let us know. You know, send a Twitter to Jeff. Actually, the best way, I think, just send a quick email. We have feedback@wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. Send an email. I'll send it along to Jeff. We'll make it happen. But we have to get your feedback. We have to hear from you, the listener, who's going to buy it. Right?
Yeah, if people want to buy it, I will take the time to put the whole thing together.
Yeah, Jeff doesn't have a whole bunch of, he doesn't have a warehouse at his house. He can't just keep these the 500,000 mugs that we're going to be printing. You got to sell them off.
Yeah,
you know,
we got to know we're gonna move that inventory.
Yep,
that's right. That's called capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, what was today's picture? Did I totally interrupt that?
Oh no,
Dino.
Well,
Dino pup.
Yeah, I called it a dino pup, and I don't know if it's really a dinosaur or if it's even a little puppy dinosaur thing, but that's kind of how it looked by the time I was done.
Awesome. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, and you can check out the drawings whenever Jeff does a doodle. wehavecommunicators.com. Check it out. And, of course, you can follow my Twitter. I'm doing little reviews. So twitter.com/lilreviews, L-I-L reviews. And with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
Yeah, we'll miss you while you're gone.
An iPod.
Yep.
Yeah, I was getting comments on the fact that I said we'd be back in the REI break room eating Justin's nut butter. And I didn't think anything of it because, you know, it's the nut butter that Justin makes.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they thought of it as a totally sexual thing. So, of course, I blushed.
Wait, what?
Okay, so they thought nut butter.
Oh.
They thought of that not as nut butter, but as a euphemism for, I'm assuming, semen.
Right, yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I would assume if I wasn't paying attention, actually. So.
Yeah, and I didn't think anything of it until I start getting some of these tweet replies. And I'm reading them going, I don't understand. And then I go back and read my tweet, and then I thought, oh, I get it now. They think that we were all having a little love bubble lunch or something.
Yeah.
So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Fingers.